Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Diane Callahan, your host of the Lighthearted Life radio show. Our topic today is how do we learn to show up for one another during crisis? So important. And my guest, I'm so excited, everyone, for my guest. Her name is Sarah McDonald. She is an executive coach and author of an amazing book, The Cancer Channel. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Diane. I'm so glad we could work this out.
Oh, my gosh. Me too. And don't you love how life works with its synchronicities? We met because we have a mutual beloved friend, Peter Hughes, who is in the theater world, and you went to school with him, right?
Peter was a couple of years ahead of me, but we did musicals together starting when I was like 10 or 11 years old. And I think he's like probably 5 or 6 years older than I am, but he was one of those teenagers I totally looked up to. Peter is such a beautiful soul and has been since his teenage years.
You know, he's been on this show before, too, talking about his book, Atonement or At-One-Ment.
Right.
Peter and I went to college together. And we did theater stuff in college. And then he directed me in Anything Goes at the Redlands Bowl, you know, how many people see a Redlands Bowl show? Like 10,000 people or something? It's like ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
A million years ago, when I talk about, like, my quote-unquote theater resume, I'm like, current century, past century.
I'm gonna steal that from you, because I started doing musicals at the Redlands Bowl when I was 10, and one I did was The Music Man, and that's and I played Amaryllis, you know, so I was like, wow, I'm gonna have quite a career, and it went downhill from there. But I did 9 or 10 musicals at the Redlands Bowl over the course of my, you know, tween and teen years, and just met some amazing people. But you and I didn't overlap, sadly.
We didn't. And so, because I didn't start really doing theater, until high school. And then, but the bowl, and then last year I was in Hello, Dolly, which was the 100th year. It was so fun. And you know what, Sarah? I made a really tough decision. You'll understand this. So Saturday was auditions for the show, for the summer show, Mary Poppins. And I had an audition appointment, to go.
I will tell you, my sister and my niece, they were both there auditioning.
That is fabulous. I made a decision not to audition because I sat back earlier last week, and because I had a cold for like 3 weeks, and I started to think about all of the things that I have going on, all of the great speaking engagements and trips. Mm-hmm. I have like 6 trips before the show, and I just thought,
it's too much.
It was a lot. I thought about, I would like to have a summer where I could be floating in my pool at the end of the day, my barbecuing, and just have that kind of more quiet, peaceful summer, because last summer it was like summer camp. I spent my whole summer doing Redlands Bowl, Hello, Dolly.
Right.
The summer before that, I had had my double mastectomy, and I had to go to wound care twice a day, so I couldn't be in the pool the entire summer. My surgery was at, and I didn't end wound care till September. So I was like, I want a pool. I want a pool summer. I want to chill.
Yeah.
So I thought, much as I have fun in the shows, I thought I'm going to have fun chilling out.
You know, kudos to you for having awareness that that's what you need right now. Because you know what? the Redlands Bowl is still going to be there. You can go back.
Yep.
You can do it.
Yep, exactly.
I want to talk about your double mastectomy just for a second to make the comment.
Yeah.
I also had breast cancer. Well, I had breast cancer. That was one of my two cancers. You had three, right? You've had three?
Well, I've had cancer four times. I had stage four non-Hodgkin lymphoma. I have to be the most, right?
Yeah.
No, I had stage four non-Hodgkin lymphoma, blood cancer, three times with two stem cell transplants. And then after all that, since I handled it pretty well, I guess I was, you know, given the gift of breast cancer. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so one of my two cancers was breast cancer, and I was given the option, if I wanted to, of having a double mastectomy. And, of course, my initial visceral reaction when I heard that I had breast cancer was, get these puppies off me, get them off me, because,
yes.
You know, I don't want any chance that the cancer will come back. And
right.
The breast reconstructionist said, you know, Sarah, a double mastectomy is major surgery. He's like,
yes.
It's major surgery. You have the option of not having it. You know, your breast cancer is contained in albeit a large lump, but it's contained in a lump, and you have the ability to do a lumpectomy. And he says, mm-hmm. let's hold, you know, he's like, you have the choice what you want to do, but my recommendation would be you hold off unless you absolutely have to have the double mastectomy. And I so appreciated him saying that to me. He said, you know, your chance of recurrence is not greater with a lumpectomy. He said they're actually, the statistics are very similar. And he said, so if you don't have to go through it, don't do it. And so you just talking about, you know, needing to go to wound care twice a day over several weeks and or months just brings it home to me, because I think so many of us, when we get a breast cancer diagnosis, we think, oh my God, I'm going to have a radical mastectomy. I want to remove the possibility that I could have cancer again. And the reality is it's major surgery, and oftentimes there are other options. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Absolutely. And I can't tell you how happy I am for you as I read your book, and I thought, oh, thank God, you know, that's great. And that was diffuse. So it was not, so the option wasn't there for me. But the funny thing is, I was like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be 60 in May, so I'm getting close to 60. So in my mind, I was like, okay, we'll just reconstruct and I'll have two perky 30-year-old boobies. It's great, you know, no problem.
I
was like, whatever, let's just get it done, right? Well, you know, first of all, reconstruction is no joke. That is oftentimes multiple surgeries to get it all right. Number two, I was not a candidate for reconstruction because of all the so I have a parting gift from my stem cell transplants, which is another potentially fatal disease called graft versus host disease. And I'm on medication to keep me alive and I'm immune compromised. And so they're like, and I have damaged lungs. So my surgeon said, I honest to God don't think I can find a plastic surgeon who would touch you with a 10-foot pole. It is way too dangerous.
Right.
So I was like, that's really the only time I cried. I had about a 3-minute breakdown. And then I was like, okay. And so then she said that we could just take the one and leave the other. And if you didn't know me before this happened, but I was like a 40 double D. I mean, I was a big, I had a big, gorgeous rack. And I was like, how do you walk around with one empty space and one giant double D breast? I don't get it. So I said, you know, and so she said, you have the option of having both taken at the same time. And like you, I was like, well, I'd rather have them gone just in case. Now, let me just also preface it by saying, I have to say, removing both breasts doesn't automatically promise that the breast cancer will be completely gone.
There can be cells.
And so, but I mean, it gives you the most, it's the most, you know, full frontal.
It's the greatest chance.
Yeah. So we went for the double. It turns out that they saw a few rogue cells in the other breast too. So I was like, ah, see, I knew.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
The funny thing
Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say I am also a double D, what was funny is in the lumpectomy, since it was in the upper quadrant, it had the effect of lifting the one breast. So I have one breast that is lifted, one that is not. And had I known that would have been the outcome, I would have had a discussion with the plastic surgeon about, while you're lifting the one, can you lift the other?
Right.
Now, just my almost 8-year-old girl is like, Mommy, what's wrong with your boobies? I'm like, I know, love. I know. So,
well, they're here, and, you know,
there's
here.
Nothing.
They're here.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
I think what's been funny for me with the and really important and something I want to share with people is that I have not missed them one second
right.
of my life.
Right.
In fact,
right.
I can wear different clothes now. And in fact,
right.
I lost 9 pounds just from the surgery.
Isn't that
I mean,
wild?
You know,
yeah.
Follow me for more, you know, weight loss tips for sure.
Watch this space. No,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I think one of the things that is remarkable about you, and, you know, you and I were kind of sharing this before the show, is some of us are just predisposed to be optimists. And,
yes.
you know, certainly you broke down when you realized there was going to be yet another loss, in this case, two losses, both breasts.
Yes.
But then you said, all right, let me reframe and move forward. And,
yes.
I think if there is, you know, it's not like we should go through life as Pollyannas and not recognize, wow, there's some serious shit going down.
Mm-hmm.
But you see it, you recognize it, you feel it, you mourn it, you go through the grief. And then you say, okay, but I'm still here, so I'm going to reframe it, and I'm going to move forward. And I think that is some of the most is one of the most helpful ways to go something this big. You know, it's like that whole Winston Churchill, you know, when you're going through hell, keep going. You know, you're
yes,
going through hell,
right.
keep going, and just believe that there's another side. Believe that there's another side.
That's what is so important to me and to you, is to help people understand and to get to that belief. Believe
yeah.
that there's a choice to see things yeah. differently. Believe that, you know, like some people talk about toxic positivity, and I'm like, no.
Right.
Positive optimism, the meaning of optimism is just believing that there are other good things concurrently happening and
yeah.
more good things coming
yeah.
down the pike. If you could just grab onto that belief,
yeah.
your whole life changed.
Yeah.
In an
yeah,
instant.
I love, for youth who are struggling with gender identity, et cetera, and I think it was originally a website to help young gay males. Have you heard of the website It Gets Better?
Yes.
And I just think that I just love that attitude. Yeah, I don't believe in toxic positive. I don't believe in blind positivity. You know, I think you do need to recognize and live in your tough moments. But, you know, when people ask me, hey, Sarah, why did you write this book? Why did you write a memoir?
Well, there's my question for you right there.
I'll just have a little Socratic conversation. No, because you're just prompting it for me. The reason I wrote the book is I was going through I had just gotten married, you know, finally gotten married in my early 40s, finally met the person that I wanted to spend my life with. We were going through fertility treatments. I had just gotten a really, really big promotion at work. It just seemed like everything was going great. And then I get one cancer diagnosis, and then I get a second cancer diagnosis at the same time. I'm told that I will never have a child, that fertility is off the table. And my dad's cancer came back, and it like all happened within the course of 2 months. And it was, you know, when you think about the roller coaster of life, this was definitely one of the big drops. And it was kind of not to be believed. I ended up surviving both cancers. Sadly, my father did not. That was one of the experiences. And then at the end of the year or 2 years later, you know, I, in talking with my oncologist, was told, hey, you can try to have a child. And I was able to have a child. So I kind of had this wild roller coaster, truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. And
yes,
as I've told many people, I wrote the book because when you receive a cancer diagnosis or really any life-threatening diagnosis, your world can become very, very small and dark. And
yes,
I said to people, like, you know, when I understood all of the treatments I was going to need to go through with no guarantee that I would actually survive, it was like looking down a long, dark tunnel, and I couldn't necessarily see light at the other end. And
yeah,
so I found myself after this year talking to so many people who were newly diagnosed, and I said, I want to let you know there is light at the other end of that long, dark tunnel. It's not guaranteed, but you need to believe that and take one step at a time to walk toward that light. And so that's why I wrote the book. I wanted people to believe that there was light. And I also wanted to share with people that, yes, going through something like this is really, really difficult, really difficult.
Yes.
But there are moments of light along that dark tunnel. And there are, if you can reframe it, there are some key learnings. You know, my life, I had a fabulous life beforehand, but I have a fabulous life now, and it's different. And
yes,
I'm glad it's different. And so, so that's part of what, you know, that's why I wrote the book. That's why I wrote the book.
Sarah, there's so much I want to talk to you about, but right now I need to take a quick moment to recognize one of our sponsors and partners.
Oh, yeah.
Women Lead Radio is brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence and by our partner, National University. National University is proud to be one of the largest private nonprofit universities, founded in 1971, which sounds so long ago, doesn't it? But it's not. The National University mission is to provide accessible, achievable higher education to adult learners. Today, National University educates students from across the U.S. and around the globe with over 170,000 alumni worldwide. Thank you for your support, National University, and to all of our sponsors and partners. And now back to our show, The Lighthearted Life, with my guest, Sarah McDonald. Sarah, I really wish this show was so much longer because there's so much to talk about. And we have so many parallels. It's amazing. Just after I got in remission the first time, so I was diagnosed in 2007 with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And by the way, they thought that they saw something in one of my breasts at that point, and I had to have a biopsy done. And I'm like, what the heck? You don't get two cancers at the same time, right? And my doctor's like,
it doesn't happen.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
It does happen, and you could. And I'm like, no, this is not okay. So you know, that one waited a few years. But the other thing is I got in remission in January of 2008, and my father passed away just after that in March. And he had, you know, some kidney cancer stuff. And so we just have such a similar path. And
so that's why we're writing books, Diane.
That's why we're writing books and taking names, right?
That's right.
And
that's
sharing our story. I remember, so I had both of my stem cell transplants at City of Hope, and then I had to go back there for the clinic. So my brother, Jim, he gave him title, and he's now given himself multiple promotions. So basically now he is vice president of transportation and logistics in the company that is Diane Callahan, right?
That's awesome.
And so I remember being in the waiting rooms feeling like death, right? Feeling terrible.
Right.
Chemo and transplant, it's rough. And if I ever met somebody who was ahead of me on their journey, I would strike up a conversation if I had the energy. I just wanted to touch him. I just wanted to get some of that juju, you know, like I can do this too. I'm seeing someone right before my very eyes who is like 2 years out from their transplant and they look great. And now I'm 12 years out from my first transplant, and then my second one was 11 months later, so I'm 11 years out from my second transplant. And so when I have to go to clinic or, you know, be around people who are dealing with cancer, I'm like, look at me. You can't even tell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can show you scars, but, you know, I mean, this is possible. It's real. You can survive. And that's what I loved so much about your book, was the concept of survive and thrive, basically, like the learnings. And it's so funny because at the end of your book, and I want you to talk about them, but I'm just going to kind of tease it, you talk about the good that happens. And there were, I think, four specific things that you decided to do. The funny thing is I did the same thing. I know. I didn't write it in my book, but I did. So my bucket list, and the way you talk about it is the no regrets bucket list, right? Because people would ask me, oh my gosh, what's on your bucket list? And it's like, where are you going to travel? And I'm like, that's not on my list. My list is do good work that matters.
Yeah.
Spend time with family and friends. I upped my love game, which is a lot like your commitment to in your heart. And then also for me, serve the Lord. What were the good things that that came out of your cancer journey for you?
So I think the first big kind of epiphany that gave me context was just that life is precious and short, and therefore we must do what is in our hearts. Like it is precious and it is short. And I think there is nothing like a cancer diagnosis to put someone face-to-face with their mortality. And I know people are like, I know, I need to celebrate every day, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, actually, you do. I mean, when you know that your time is limited and it is limited for all of us, you need to be very, very intentional about it. So, you know, the first thing that I had to order in my head or reframe is a big verb for me is choosing my life over my work. And, you know, what I would say is I was very, very lucky to work at eBay when I was diagnosed with cancer. I was lucky to be working at eBay because the company or the people that work at the company are so tremendously supportive of people who are in crisis, right? And when I was diagnosed with cancer, they told me, hey, we don't want you to worry about your job. Don't worry about your job. Don't worry about your email. Don't worry about your insurance. Don't worry. We got you. And that was unbelievable and sadly unusual. There are huge efforts being made by many companies and many groups, most notably Publicis, which is a European PR firm, which is they are championing something called the Working with Cancer Pledge, which is encouraging companies to support their employees who are diagnosed with cancer by guaranteeing their jobs for a year, by, you know, making them aware of all of the benefits that are available to them, and then actively trying to expand benefits for employees who have cancer. So there's my little advertisement for Publicis and the Working with Cancer Pledge. And I don't work for Publicis. I just think it's amazing what they're doing. But eBay is a very mission-based company, and I was working there in great part because I really believed in the mission that eBay had, which was enabling economic opportunity for all. So I worked very, very long hours, Diane, in working for eBay, and I was fine with the trade-off. I was fine because I felt I was helping sellers to really make to make a living. But the hours that I worked and the commute that I did, it was 2 hours each way every day, And
yes,
at
I
some point,
that, Sarah.
Yeah, it was nutty. It was nutty. I once did the math to figure out how much time I had spent in the car over a 14-year period, and it was over a full year of my life.
Oh, my God.
And when I thought about
that. To yourself.
Well, when I thought about it, I was like, you know, it is time for me to do something else, and it is time for me to focus on my life. So I am very, very clear now, and I've worked at a couple of companies since eBay now. They've all been small startups, and I'm very, very clear that I will choose my life over my work, that I have very clear boundaries as to when I will work, how much I will work. And that is not to say that I am not dedicated. I will work very hard during the hours that I am focused on working, but I will focus on my life more. So that was my long-winded first thing. Second, I am committed to saying what is in my heart. And I think often in our lives we hesitate to say what we're really thinking because we're afraid of how it will be received. And this is not to say that I just go out and try to be a jerk and just share all thoughts in my heart. But I do think question if I love someone, and this can include somebody that I work with, I make sure that I take time to tell that person.
Yes.
And so I have now become a prolific texter. I text people all the time to tell them how much I love them, to tell them how grateful I am for them. And that is something that I've just committed to in my heart. I need to tell people what is in my heart. I also decided to stop worrying so much about time, being so time-bound. Now, my maiden name was Brubacher, and we are Swiss-German. Mm-hmm. And, my dad, if we were on time to something, he felt we were late. He always wanted us to be, he always wanted us to be there ahead of time. And in fact, kind of in the spirit of that, I used to collect watches. I just loved timepieces. I loved watches. And during my year of cancer, I took my watch off. And I decided that I was not going to be so beholden to time and that I was going to get to places when I did. And, you know, we had the time change yesterday. This morning, I went to wake my 8-year-old up, and she said, "Mommy, I'm too tired." And you promised me I could sleep in. I was like, "Well, I did let you sleep in 10 more minutes." She's like, "Nope, more." And I thought to myself, "Okay, we're going to be late to school today." And I said, "Okay, sweetie, you let me know when you want to get up." And I won't be saying the same thing when she's in high school, but at age 8, I'm like, you know what? We just can't get so focused about time. And then, you know, lastly, I decided to have a baby. So, I had been trying to have a baby. I referenced that at the beginning of the show. I had been trying to have a baby when I was first diagnosed. I was told I couldn't. And when 2 years after my last, when I was told, after my last treatment, 2 years, when I was told we can try, you know, I said to my husband, "Hey, we've been told we can try to have a baby." And he said, "I want a guarantee that cancer won't come back." And I
said, there's no
guarantee. And I said, and really, we need to not worry about, you know, whether I'm going to die. We need to think about how I'm going to live, and I want to have a baby. So I think we are coming up at the end of the hour, so I wanted to finish that story quickly. But I think deciding to make those big leaps and embrace life.
Embrace life. And that's the message that is burning in both of our hearts, I believe, too.
Yeah.
I don't want somebody to have to get a terrible diagnosis or one of those terrible calls in the middle of the night to realize it's to embrace the here and now to make our life. I'm taking a class tomorrow, actually, Sarah, on living your heart's desire. And it's like, it's now. It's we have to do it. I love the bucket list. Yes, it's now. And it's like, don't worry if I'm going to die. Worry how I'm going to live. And because we're all going to die, all of us. We don't know the how.
We're all going to die. And I want to say to people, what are you waiting for? Like, why would it be better? Why would it be better next week? Do it now. Just do it now. And you know what? It might not be perfect. That's the other, like things are not going to be perfect. Just do them anyway. Just do them anyway.
Yeah.
And it will work out.
Perfection is the root of the word perfection just means done. I mean, you know, it's done. It doesn't mean it's without any possible flaws. So, yes, I'm with you on that. We get so hung up. Let me, it's about time for us to wrap it up, which I told you it would go by in like 3 minutes. I want to let people know that if they want to get a hold of you, they can find you at, where could they find you?
It's, so I have a website, which is called thecancerchannelbook.com, and they can email me at Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at thecancerchannelbook.com.
Perfect. Also, what we didn't get to talk about, but I want to just put this in there, is that you have been doing a lot of speaking at different companies like Microsoft, eBay, Moody's, and also at medical institutions, talking about how do we support people when they're going through something like this. And if we can't do that in our organizations, what the heck are we here for? It's all about the people. I know we got to sell stuff. I know we need profit. I know we need to do stuff, but it's the people who do the stuff. And
agreed.
If we can't support people, then we've messed up. We don't understand.
Yeah.
So listeners, get a hold of Sarah. She's amazing. Read her book. Even if you're not even in cancer land, you probably know somebody who has been, and it will give you so much insight. But more than anything, it will encourage you to live your happiest, most joyful, most purposeful, and productive life starting today without all that BS. And if you want, she and I are both executive coaches, so you can always reach out to one of us if you would like to get some coaching. And with that, I would like to say thank you so much, Sarah, for being my guest today. And also a special thanks to all of our listeners in the United States and also around the world, because we are an international show. And after our show today, you can listen to Women Lead Radio on all of the subscription podcasts, you know, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple, iTunes, everywhere. We are expanding quickly to a daily radio show and podcast. So for now, we'll be back again for another live Women Lead Radio show on Mondays at 9 a.m. Pacific time and at Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific time. So, everyone, it's been my sincere pleasure to be your host. I hope that you can just take all of this wisdom, hard-gained wisdom that Sarah shared, and go out there and literally go out there and live your most lighthearted life. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Diana.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.